The Lord be with you. One of the hazards of hanging around in a church and with a bunch of religious people is that there's a good chance you're going to hang around with some theology nerds. Those are people that obsess about questions about God and questions of theology the same way some people play with their model trains. And some people obsess about Star Trek or Star Wars or their computers. And maybe when you're thinking of theology, maybe we call these people nerds. It's because when we think of theology, we typically imagine some dusty, damp and dusty old men with patches on their elbows in libraries somewhere. And they're inventing new sort of Greek and German words that make the scriptures just that much more impenetrable. I'm not really thinking of those people. For me, theology is questions that take God seriously. Sometimes they're dangerous questions, dangerous for our lives, dangerous for our lifestyles. But they're always hopeful questions. For me, the very best kind of theology is that which orients us and shapes us, gives us a way to live in this world. Reminds us that we are God's creatures, helps us live as citizens, as individuals, as people and families and communities. Theology is our best imaginings of God's character expressed in our work, in our play, in the shape of our worship, which takes all shapes. Worship that gets spelled out in poetry and architecture and our tattoos. Sometimes it's spelled out in laughter and tears. It's always a living sacrifice of gratitude and celebration when it's good theology, at least. Theology is our engine of faith, and it's our anchor. It's always a work in progress. One such work in progress, as I talked to the kids already today, is the annual tradition of setting up our nativity scene. And you'll see I've got a little traditional one. This is pretty similar to the one I grew up with, set up on the pulpit here. Now, nativity scenes show up in all kinds of media. There's wood, there's ceramic, there's porcelain, there's Playmobil, there's Lego. I saw one that looked like s'mores, a series of toasted marshmallows. Right under our noses, there on the coffee table or on the veranda, set up over here sometimes. Sort of the ground zero moment for God's presence in the world. It's a theatrical freeze frame, sculpted and staged reenactment. It's a bunch of people who are blessed to be a part of that great moment, what they saw, what they touched, what they smelled. They beheld God's mercies come to life. It's a little bit of diorama, part Sunday school lesson, lots of tchotchke knick-knack value, if that's what you're into. Now, there's lots of Bible translations out there. New NIV, NRSV, King James, The Message. Today, we're going to turn to a nativity scene. It only translates a few short passages in Luke and Matthew. And today, as we have an epiphany moment, I'll ask each of those of you who brought your own nativity scenes, just feel free to set it up in front of you. But, oh, of course, yeah. Those translations are not portable always. But anyways, take a second then and remember your most cherished nativity scene. I mentioned the one where the cow had its face chewed off by the dog. I played many hours with that nativity scene. Just take a moment and think in your mind's eye your most cherished nativity scene. Now, sadly, I don't have a complete set here because the thing that gets the whole point of this story, at least for our text in Matthew, is a star. And what's great about having the star in a nativity scene is that it's the whole universe taking note of what God is doing. Sometimes we might feel small and little and tiny when we look at how big God is, but to think that the universe itself takes note of what happens on this little speck of rock, that's pretty encouraging. Feels pretty good to me. Naturally, most nativity scenes have lots of angels. This set only has one. Quite beautiful, actually. Angels, again, if anyone could think that a speck of rock in this corner of the galaxy has any significance at all, it doesn't need to be angels. Why should they care about these moist, wet, earthlings that live on that dirt ball circling that little obscure sun. And yet, the spiritual realm takes note of what's happening in the nativity scene. Now, the actors, the parts that we sometimes forget about, and that the children, of course, didn't miss at all, are the animals. Now, they're not just there because we happen to be telling a story about some agrarian people in first century Palestine. They're there because all of nature knows exactly what is happening. Some traditions make a habit of blessing animals, and yet, let's not kid ourselves, it's the animals that bless us. All these weary millennia that creatures must have been waiting, adapting, and living in sort of this survival, I might have to pull up my sleeves for this here, survival of the fittest world we live in, of course they're excited to see Christ in the world. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say that you have to be an animal lover to understand God's grace in the world, but I'm definitely going to say it helps. It helps. Animal haters, come on. Now, right underneath the Christ child, any good nativity scene has a manger. Sometimes you can, this one, sadly, you can't take Jesus out of it because it's fun to sort of move him around, but then he gets lost. But anyways, what's the manger doing there? Well, that's society's contribution, isn't it? This is this public square's contribution when they see Christ come to earth, a couple of pieces of wood made to hold some animal feed. Actually, and don't read too much into this, but not all that different from the couple of pieces of wood that society offers at the end of Jesus' life as well. And then we have shepherds. They're the outcasts. They're the losers. If they were around today, we'd have a show. It'd be like TLC, Bethlehem Shepherds. And it would be mostly beeping and really embarrassing hillbilly behavior, toothless guys, and maybe one of those big jugs of hooch. These are not the classy people showing up. And of course, we have the Holy Family, a scared teenage mother, obedient and patient, and this incredible, long-suffering, and obedient father named Joseph. And they're both weary from a long journey. We don't have a donkey here, but... Oh, no, donkey's laying down. Sorry, I've just got to miss the jots and tittles now and then. Anyways, and finally, right underneath that manger, right in the center of the whole thing, is that little baby, the Word made flesh. Now, of all the animals in the world, Homo sapien, as a mammal, is born as kind of a pathetic thing. We don't get up and run a few minutes after we're born. We need to get carried around and coddled and sent to college, and then we come home and never really had parenting. Really, come on. If you are this almighty being and you pick human being baby to come to the world, is there a more helpless and vulnerable and dependent thing? God, as one of us, we were one of those. Cool. And from today's passage, of course, naturally, off stage, the part that I have never seen in a nativity scene, his name's Herod. He's the reaction of the powers of the world. And I thought, oh, too bad they don't make Herod figures. That would be really great. And then I realized, of course they do. Here he is. He's, I figure Darth Vader will fill in for our Herod. Not all that different, kind of a maniacal, crazy person. Meets sort of a hideous end. So we're not going to put Herod at the scene. We'll move him over here. But let's make no mistake. Herod's there. The official greeting from the crown, the violent, the paranoid, deceptive, and brutal, desperate to hold on to the illusion of power. Really creepy part. He's reading the scriptures with intent to kill. He's hearing prophecy, but he wants to turn the scriptures to his own will. So, no, we don't make Herod figures typically for nativity scenes, but he's there. And if we made him, it would be the favorite one for the kids to play with. Let's not kid ourselves. He'd have a chariot or something. It would be a a fun accessory or an add-on package for a nativity scene. Now, of course, a lot of kids wouldn't be allowed to play with Herod, so let's just move on, and I should just get over my Lego Darth Vader. I had my moment. Okay, good. But today's passage isn't really about any of those people. All I've done is set the scene. Today is Epiphany Sunday, and as I've already said, we get to have Epiphany on Sunday. It's a pretty big deal in the church calendar. And today we are celebrating the visitation of the Magi. And we call them wise men if you're put off by the fact that they're idolaters and pagans and astrologers. You call them three kings if you really want to distance yourself from that and you want to twist that Isaiah passage we heard in earlier into something it doesn't really mean. The Magi are God's big surprise here. Not just who he invites to the party, but how God is related to and how God is revealed. Now, today, it would have been really great if our church had a color printer, because if you look on the back of your bulletin, you'll see this really terrific Chinese rendering, and it was dazzling and colorful, and then now it's all in sort of grayscale. But I think, maybe, just maybe, there's enough of a hint of how foreign and strange and exotic those people were. And really, the church has been embarrassed by these Magi in a lot of different ways, especially in times when we wanted to steer people away from paganism or idolatry or shamanistic rituals. And yet we shouldn't be that surprised, because they're the first in this long list of people like fishermen and zealots and lepers, barkeepers, sex trade workers, thieves, Samaritans, Syrophoenicians, women. With most nativity scenes probably owing to a great tradition of religious paintings, and probably owing to a little bit of the Eastern tradition of icons, each of these characters, the humans and the animals, are inclined towards the Christ child. We can see how they bend and bow. Again, the kids didn't miss that at all. They bend and bow in expectation and wonder, in reverence and humility. They're drawn to the manger. They're falling in worship. They're inclined as though the tug of gravity is strongest near the manger. The tug of grace. In the Western tradition, we don't really understand the language of the icons. Henry Nouwen's famous book that describes icons for the rest of us, the preface says, for the record, Henry doesn't know anything about icons, but enjoy the book anyways. As the Westerners, we don't understand the tradition of reading into these rich, storied pictures. But there is something about the posture of these animals, the posture of these people, posture of the mother and the father and these foreigners. Their whole body oriented, reoriented, just as the whole world is reoriented. Now, as a self-professed theology geek, I'll note two schools in the Magi and the Nativity scene. School number one, let's call it Magi friendly. You can show your hands if you want to. This might be embarrassing for some, but the Magi friendly version says, I better give you both schools before I ask for a show of hands. What am I doing? Okay. Magi friendly says, yes, they belong here. Every time you set up a nativity scene, you should have your Magi there with the Holy Family and the animals. And the second, and for quite some time, this was the school I fell into. It's called the Magi Don't Belong Here. And of course, sticklers and people who are obsessed with details will tell you that the Matthew story that we see with the story of Magi didn't happen at the same time and place as the shepherd story that happens in Luke. So people like me have spent quite a number of years transferring the Magi from other people's living rooms over to like the skating rink and the little Christmas house thing. It's more accurate, I would tell them, being pedantic and annoying, I'm sure. They're en route, let's just say. They'll get there soon, but it's more accurate this way. And people rolled their eyes and passed me another eggnog, and we all got it over it. They were bored to tears, but the thing is, with the problem with these three Persians, or whatever they were, riding camels on the ice rink in the winter wasn't the entire problem. Now, there's a point. If we're going to be sticklers about the details of the Luke and the Matthew story. The Magi don't belong. So it sounds like the Magi don't belong school has it all in the bag. Really, they're right and being right. We're Protestants, man. Being right? Done deal. Let's move on. But what is a nativity scene anyway? Is it a collection of first-generation action figures playing out a scene? Or is it something more than that? Is it a theological description of the Christ event? If a nativity scene is theology and poetry, if the manger, the shepherds, the animals, the angels, the star, and the Holy Family is the shape of the earth's response, the universe's response, the shape of our own hope, if a nativity scene is what our theology looks like when we run out of words, when we overflow with awe and wonder, when the promise and mystery of God's grace draws us near and bends our lives and reorients them and inclines us to God's grace, better yet, inclines us to a life of grace in the world, well then, yeah, those are times we feel a little vulnerable, a little outcast even, or forgotten. When we've tried all the tricks or techniques, we've read the stars, and we've tried the potions. And even when we've grasped for illusions of power and influence, especially when we feel a deep longing for a new creation that the dog seems to understand so well. If that's what a nativity scene is, then sorry, I can't wait. I can't find myself in the camp with those who need... No, sorry. I will find myself in the camp with those who need the Magi right there beside the manger. I can't leave them on a table across the room anymore. En route? I think not. They've already been sent home with hearts full of joy on a journey that they could not have chosen for themselves. Those Magi are us. God's creatures, foreigners, strangers, others, the scraggly outer branches of the human family tree chasing glimpses of God's grace. We are that nativity scene along with the whole of creation. And it's in our worship and it's in our lives, it's in our living rooms, it's in our bedrooms, it's in our offices, it's in the streets where we bring it to life. As blessed and worshiping people, as fragile and simple creatures, inclined and reoriented by God's profound grace. I'll keep the Magi just where they are. Thanks be to God.